Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send us a recipe or a question, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about taking control. And we, of course, are the leader. So we want to be able to maintain control so that we can lead everyone towards a successful outcome. Because how are we going to do that if we've lost control over the group? If we've lost control over the process. So what do we actually need to take control over, right? What do we need to do? What is it that we need to have control of? Thank you. Thank you all for being here. Lots of folks answering, lots of folks participating. Thank you. I think since this is a non-scripted show, of course, it goes where we take it. And I think the first thing we're going to be talking about is taking control over what I'm going to call the group dynamic. Taking control over what's going on, right? The group dynamic. And the second thing we're going to talk about is civility, because that goes with taking control over the group dynamic. Our civility rules, which at their essence say we will not be rude to one another. And then we've got a lot of control that we need to have over the relationships between between everyone, really. Like interlocking relationships, because they're all related to each other. And if we lose control over one type, we will lose control over the rest of them, too. It's like a domino effect. So the first kind of interlocking relationship is we have to have some understanding, right? And that's empathy, because empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement, right? Right. We have to have some understanding of our employer requirements and expectations. And remember, on this show, we call whoever it is that had the brains to bring us in as leader, an organization, a person, a board, whoever it is, our employer. It's a generic term that we use. It does not necessarily indicate the actual relationship. We just call them our employer, because it's easier. But it's whoever it is we report to and whoever it is who backs us up when we need, well, when we need some backing. We need some funding. We need some, well, some power to enforce perhaps the civility rules, right? So we have to understand the interlocking relationship and have some control over our employer, have some empathy, right? How about the media? The media expectations and the need to have publicity, right? And to be maybe even financially compensated. You have to think about that. What is it the media wants? Because the media is people, right? What is it that they like? Why should they promote us to the general public? That's a good question, right? How about some interlocking relationships and control over how we deal with different types of groups, the others, so to speak? How about opposition groups? How about groups that aren't really opposition? They want the same thing. They're similar, but they're not us, and they have different leaders and like that. And how can we control the relationship? You know, this is an interesting point, too, that we often overlook. And I suppose I overlook it because I've got a lot of experience. So I don't really have this anymore, but especially when you're starting out, you might have to have some control over yourself. your own self-doubt, your own wondering whether or not I'm the right person for this task, right? Yeah, let's control those kinds of thoughts. Maybe get some expert opinion and assistance and really control how that's used, right? And, okay, control. People are talking about enforcing the process. And that's when we have the employer help us and like that. And I'm going to say control over the rules of enforcement and process, right? Because we need, you can say play nice, right, with the civility rules, for example. But if you don't have any kind of way of enforcing it, it's just words, right? Yeah. Now, some people respond well to that. Some not so much, especially those who are being deliberately uncivil for one reason or another. We'll talk about it. Now, we've got to get control, right? What we need to take control over. How do we maintain that control? Because it's one thing to gain back the control, but you've got to maintain it, and you've got to maintain it nice. I mean, these people are not, I don't know, prisoners or something. They are people that need to be voluntarily engaged. So how do we control that well? How do we control it nicely, right? And so that everybody feels that they are valued and respected. Yeah, I'm going to go for this. People are talking about making your expectations and instructions clear, right? Maintaining control with the employer backing is a good point. Yeah, this goes to explanation, but it's not really an instruction exactly. You need to remember that you have to keep explaining things. Because you've done it 473 times. But this is your participant's first time. And they don't understand what's happening. They want to know why. They want to know what's going on. They want to know what we're doing next, right? So you have to keep explaining the process and how it's going to work and like that, and that we're doing well. Because sometimes people don't understand that we really are getting somewhere. It just kind of doesn't happen all at once, right? Right. Excuse me, I'm going to take a sip of water. How to maintain control? People are talking about modeling civility and modeling confidence and enthusiasm, right? I like this. I do this a lot. If you've got kind of a very either large or very diverse group with different interests and like that, but they all want the same thing, you can create teams within the team. Sometimes that's necessary so that people can understand the value and their part in it, the interest they have in creating a successful outcome and what success is going to look like, which is one of the main things, right? You know, this is true too. And we're going to start talking about it because we are practical people and we want to get to the meat of this. But this is a real true statement that quite a few people, Muhammad and others, are saying, that you cannot control everything as leader. You need to be flexible, right? Some people are saying you need to pick your fights. And I don't like to think of it as fighting, but sometimes you do have to pick your issues. And let the really minor ones, not the civility ones, but the minor differences kind of slide so that we can get our major difficulty solved and work towards a solution. So, yeah, you do have to pick what you're doing, pick your process, right? Yeah. And that's very important because you really can't control everything, and you need to be flexible. You need to understand that, and you need to go forward. Mm-hmm. Yes. So let's start. Let's talk about the group dynamic first. This is a true statement, too. Yeah, Eric and others saying that you need direction to create the dynamic. And that's one of the things that a leader helps to form. Where are we going, right? And in order to determine that, we're going to need to determine what success looks like. Now, we determine it right off, and it changes, right? Because things happen. Outside circumstances happen. Employer changes happen. But you need to establish why we're here and what we'd like to accomplish. What does success look like, right? So that we can create a dynamic and work towards it. If we never get that focus, you will not have a group dynamic. You will not make a team. You will not have enthusiasm. People will wander off because you'll have to go forward and get it really clear. Why are we here, right? Yeah, that creates the group dynamic. We're here for a purpose that we all agree on is a good idea. Now let's flesh that out and go forward. Ah, we're already thinking as a group, right? Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, this is true. People are talking about everyone having a common goal for different reasons. Sometimes that's true. Sometimes you have a very focused group and they all want exactly the same thing for the same reason, usually because they are employees of a certain level, for example, in a corporation. They're all in agreement. They just don't know how to get there. They're all in agreement this would be a good idea. You've already got a group dynamic, right? But sometimes you've got people in the room, so to speak. I mean, they might be Skyping and like that. But you have people who want the same outcome and can define success in the same way, but they have different reasons. And therefore, they've got kind of different focus. And they have to understand that we're all in this together, and no matter what your reason, we need to get this done. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. So they have a common goal, a common want for a common success. But it's going to impact differently. Yes, people are asking for an example. The clearest example that I really have is that in the United States, marijuana is federally illegal. It still is, actually. And for years and years and years and years and years, different groups approached the federal government and the proper people in the federal government. I'm not going to go into the details about it, to say that it would be good to at least have medical marijuana. Different groups representing, well, it's kind of silly to say representing different diseases, but representing wanting to have alleviation from different diseases. For example, there's all kinds of stuff that involves pain and seizures and things that marijuana calms, right? They're not exactly true, but it makes life better. And so there are all kinds of different groups. They had different diseases, different problems that they were trying to solve, different medical problems. Then there were social activists. Then there were the growers, the marketers, the sellers, all the levels of selling and marketing and like that, and the renters of the stores. And I mean, there's lots of people attempting to get the product legal to their constituents and attempting to accommodate that legality by selling it and producing it and growing it and like that. But you see, that's all kinds of different kinds of people. And they have the same goal, but for different reasons. And eventually, because it wasn't working piecemeal and the federal government was still not on board enough, they had to get together and do something extremely unusual and imaginative and quite possibly not all that legal. They said, you know, this isn't working. Let's try it on the state level. And state law is overridden by federal law. Did I mention marijuana is federally illegal even now? But they had to get together and say, you know, we're going to put our money, our time, our expertise It should try to get marijuana legalization on the ballot in states. Now, it wasn't exactly illegal to put it on the ballot in states, but it was highly imaginative. And it still could be overridden by federal law. Federal law takes precedence over state law. But we had a liberal federal administration at the time. My goodness, we're going to have to all work together. We don't like each other. We each have our fiefdom, especially the diseases. They have whole organizations looking for cures and stuff. And like AIDS, right? And things that affect mostly elderly people. And all kinds of different kinds of groups that already had leaders and didn't really want to get together. But we weren't going to make it if we didn't all push together and pool funding and expertise and like that and voter gathering and signature. There's a lot of stuff that you have to do to get something on a ballot. So they had to work together, even though they had very diverse interests, but they wanted the same thing. They wanted marijuana to be legalized, right, in the state. So you had to work together. Common goal, different reasons. And it worked, yeah. And the first few were very, very complicated, and then other states looked around and went, oh, look at all that tax revenue, yeah, which is what politicians want. They want more money to waste. Oops, they want more money to spend for the benefit of their citizenry. Or to waste, yeah. Well, you know, it's true everywhere. And so they looked at it with greedy eyes and went, oh, my, that seems good. But the first few times was really complicated and had to get everybody pulling in the same direction, right? Right. How about team dynamics? So we had to make a group dynamic, a group of extremely different types of people wanting the same thing. Mm-hmm. Yes, this is true, too. A lot of times, Hussein and others are talking about prior relationships creating conflict within the group dynamic. You have to ferret those out as leader, right? Prior relationships creating conflict. Sometimes you've got a group that has, I don't like to use the word failed, but they have failed in the past, for example. And you have been brought in and tasked with the idea of fixing that and turning them around. And if the prior leader is now a participant, well, he or she is kind of reluctant to have you succeed because it shows that they were not very good at it. If Sue can just come in and fix things, right? Yeah. Or sometimes people in your group, and that's not the whole group, have a prior relationship too, either good or bad. But they make like a click. They giggle and talk to each other and exclude others. Or they glare at each other, which is not a click, and refuse to work with each other. Oh, let's divide them up. If it's possible, I put them in different groups. Because sometimes I have quite a few groups going. And I go, well, no, this is not working. We're going to switch around, right? When I see the dynamic, when I see the other people, I decide which ones are going to stay and which ones are going to be switched out, right? Sometimes I've had that option. Sometimes I don't. In fact, if I have a specialty, my specialty is to come in to groups that have already failed and figure out how come and how to move forward, right? Right. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about conflict sometimes. How about us talking about the civility rules next? Mm-hmm. They're the only rules, of course, the Recipe for Peace now actually has. And at their base, they say we will not be rude to one another. We will treat everyone in a civil and respectful manner. You should announce this, just like I just announced it, really clearly and definitely looking in everybody's eyes at the very beginning of the process. That's the first things that come out of my mouth is the civility rules. Even if you don't think it's going to be a problem because you never know, right? Even if this group is pretty much all on the same step, it's just that they don't know how to go forward. Even if you're fairly certain they won't go uncivil. Let's announce them anyway. We can all nod and laugh, right? Right. Then they need to be, the civility rules need to be enforced immediately, consistently, and fairly. Immediately, consistently, and fairly. I don't care if you have to do it 500 times. If you let civility get away from you and you let the dynamic become hostile, it will be hard to get it back. The trick is to stop it before it starts and not to let it go on and then say, look, we're becoming uncivil to each other. It's time to enforce the civility rules. No. Immediately, consistently, and fairly. I enforce small infractions so that they don't become bigger infractions. Pardon me. So, and besides, if you have the civility rules, yes, exactly. Suki and others are saying they create a convivial atmosphere. Wouldn't you like to be working in a convivial atmosphere? It adds to the group dynamic. Everyone is respected. Everyone is heard. And we're chugging along. We're pushing the process forward. Exactly the question. People are asking, what happens if people, the civility rules? Sometimes you have someone like that. Sometimes there's a little click like that. I just explained to you about former leaders in your group, for example, who failed. Sometimes you have someone who is, I don't know how to say this better. You ever meet anybody or deal with anyone who everything that comes out of their mouth seems uncivil, but you don't really think they mean it exactly? It's just their nature. They're kind of rude by nature. It's somewhat of a cultural thing in its way. These people I take aside and I explain that that's what's happening privately. They usually explain that they're going to try to tone it down. And sometimes we have a little secret sign when they're kind of starting to go uncivil and they're raising their voice and they're acting like someone else is an idiot. You've met these people, right? Yeah, they're really annoying. But there they are in your group, and they're part of the group dynamic. And I tell them that when they're starting to go to the other side, then I'm going to, for example, pat their hand, or I'm going to say their name, or something like that, or remind them. I'm going to say, fill in the blank, civility. Yes, so that everybody knows that we're enforcing the civility rules. And we've kind of primed it that they understand, oops, yeah, I've done it again. Yes, people are naming different ethnicities and like that. Sometimes it's a regional thing planted into a culture that's different. For example, in the United States, we're a very big country, right? And I deal with multinationals and people that are all over the country also. And, for example, a way to negotiate in New York is different than the style that is used in the south of the country, for example, in New Orleans. And it seems rude, but it's not. It's a traditional negotiation technique to kind of wave your arms and get loud. It doesn't mean that in New Orleans they're any more civil, naturally. It's just that they do it with a different way. They do it being kind of, they do it being kind of pretending that it's saying something nice, but it's rude. Does that make sense? Yeah, you've all seen this kind of a thing. And that's uncivil both ways. So you remind each of them that civility rules are in play. Take 3 deep breaths, right? And let's not lose our cool in any direction, right? Right. Because sometimes it really is true. People are not negotiating well because of their standard negotiation practice. and what they've been taught and what they've seen in their business dealings, right? But we have to accommodate each other. Sometimes there is a cultural difference in an organization or between organizations, a way of doing things that is different. And we have to understand that, too. We're going to get to empathy. It's one of the things we need to understand. So sometimes the civility rules are accidentally being violated. And we're going to talk to somebody privately and remind them about it. And they'll, oh, yeah, sorry. And laugh. Yeah. And then everybody laughs because it is funny. And we understand that we didn't mean it. It just kind of came out that way. But, yeah, let's back up, right? And speaking of backing up, we need to have the employer back us up too, right? Before you go into any situation, before you take something on, because after all, you want your reputation to be success, right? Your reputation to be Sue can handle anything and anyone. I mean, it's like being a lion tamer, right? You want your reputation to be the ability to maintain control, make the process go forward, and within a reasonable expectation of time, effort, and money, get things done, right? That's what we're here for, yes. So that's what we're really aiming for. And the employee, you need to have, and I get it in writing, in my contract. I think you should too. Do not go into a situation when the employer expects you to have all of the enforcement. You're going to need backup. You're going to need to be able to do something if people are uncivil. And not just say, civility rules, nah, that works if you've got a prior deal. But it's in, and they're being accidentally excitable. But not if somebody's being a bully, for example. You have to be able to inform people what's going to happen to them if they don't stop that. And the answer is you will be impacted. Your job will be impacted, your employment, your position, your money, whatever it is, you'll be dismissed from the group. If it's a prestigious thing to be in the group and everybody on your employment level, for example, is a participant in the group. See, yes, I suppose this is true. People are saying you need to be able to have a threat behind you. I don't like to think of it as a threat, but yes, you need to be able to have a threat behind you to be able to say, no, this is inappropriate behavior. We will not be doing it under any circumstances, right? Right. Mm-hmm. The other thing, you need to have the employer back you up. I like it in writing because sometimes they say yes, yes, of course, but when it comes down to it, they don't want to. We're going to make a fuss that they got to want to. Mm-hmm. Very important. Very important for them to understand it's not negotiable. Okay, which means that you, as leader, in order to maintain control, and this is a control mechanism, you use the civility rules to maintain control, and you must abide by them. You must be an example of the civility rules. Yes. An example of the civility rules. You can't enforce something that you don't adhere to. How can you? You can't control something that you don't control in yourself. Now, yes, exactly. The question is being asked by many folk, and thank you all for being here. What happens if you have kind of a bad day? Or maybe someone goads you? Which happens, you should try not to. As you get more experience, you get a thicker skin and you cannot be annoyed. I cannot be annoyed. I have dealt with all of it before, and I cannot be annoyed. I enforce the civility rules in a civil manner. But sometimes you've had it and things go oops, and you violate the civility rules yourself. What should you do? Yes. No, do not ignore it. You need to apologize. You need to use yourself as an example of the civility rules are in effect always, and I just violated them, and I apologize. Right? You must acknowledge it and apologize. I apologize, but you must also apologize and adhere to the civility rules. Okay, people are saying somebody has caused you to violate the civility rules. You apologize and make them apologize in front of everyone. I'm going to say do that sparingly. And not unless you're really sure that you can. I don't like to do that. Because, you see, if you can't get an apology or you get something that's surly, are you going to accept it? Are you going to back down? Yeah, no, I don't generally require the fake handshake. You know what I mean, in front of everyone. I think that it is it's a losing face type thing, as Suki says. It's not, that could go very wrong, okay? Because what you're going to do on the spot if they just won't, it's going to take up all our time, and it's going to hurt the group dynamic, right? Yeah. Dismiss one from the room. All right. People are saying call security. Maybe. I don't like to get to the point, and experience will help with this. I try to stop any incivility immediately, and before it gets to the point where we've really come to blows or are about to, which would be the reason to call security. And expelling one and not the other is taking sides. It really is, right? I think you're right. You can stay. You have to leave because you're a dog. Right? Let's think about that for a minute. Not such a good position to be in. Right. Not so viable. Not so good. Yeah. So I don't like to get to the point of you apologize to him. We're not four-year-olds. And I don't like to get to the point of expelling anyone. Then do you accept them back into the group tomorrow when they cool down? Or are they permanently out? It makes a whole bunch of more questions that have to be answered for the other people to repair the group dynamic. Try to stop any incivility before you get to that point. That's the trick. Yes, no. People are asking if the civility rules are flexible. Absolutely, positively not. You know how we say everything is flexible? And the definition of success is flexible. And how we're going to approach this is flexible. And like that, the civility rules are not flexible. We're going to create a convivial atmosphere where everyone feels welcomed and respected. Not flexible. Not negotiable. Right? Yeah. And now now that we've discovered that, let's talk about all the interlocking relationships. Right? The interlocking relationships. We need to deal with an awful lot of people in these group dynamic things, right? We need to be leader to all kinds of diversity. We need to understand what's going on in order to be an effective leader, right? And remember that that's empathy. And empathy goes all around, because it brings in everyone. And empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Yeah, that's an important point. Empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Now, who we have to understand, right? Yes, thank you. Lee and others are saying we have to understand each other. How are we going to deal with each other if we don't understand what it is, what's the basis for this, what it is that we really want, what it is that we'll really accept? And in order to get any kind of empathy with anybody, let's break out the 5W questions, right, to get some understanding. The 5W questions are who, what, where, when, and why. Who, what, where, when, and why, so that we can get some answers, and not only can they understand us, but we can understand them and reach a negotiated compromise, right? Because we're not all going to get what we want, exactly, but we're going to have a negotiated compromise, and we're going to get close, because we're going to decide on what successful outcome looks like. So we need empathy for each other. How about for the employer? Understanding of what the employer wants. Remember, employer is a generic term. What are their expectations? What do they need? Because a lot of times, also, the person who brought us in is not the ultimate head of something. They have someone to answer to, too. How they need to answer the question, how's it going? Right? And they want to have an affirmative answer to show that they chose wisely when they chose us. And, of course, they chose wisely when they chose us. I know this because we're fabulous. And we have excellent leadership control. Right? Right. So each other and over the employer. Let's find out what's going on. How about outsiders? Empathy for outsiders. Either groups that are in favor of us or not. But we have to understand their viewpoint, right? Who, what, where, when, and why. Understand their viewpoint. I suppose this is true. The participants and everybody else has to have empathy for the leader, for us. And we have to have understanding, empathy, for other leaders. And we have to understand that although we may think we, as leader, are more able, more competent, should kind of take over the thing. They have pride. They have followers. They have people who want to follow them, who don't want you to just usurp it and take over whatever it is. No, 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 no. We're going to respect other people's areas, other people's groups, and bring them towards us, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you'd be surprised, sometimes the opposition, the outsiders, that looks like opposition, sometimes not so much. Sometimes they're closer than we think. And let's have some understanding of the media, right? Because they have biases, they're human beings, right? And they have expectations, and they get busy lives. I always think of it that way. Especially even traditional media, where people are actually employees and actually paid, which is not so common so much anymore. But there's still a lot of traditional media, but they're also busy, and a lot of them have had cutbacks in their assistance and stuff like that, right? And now you've got a whole bunch of folk that are social media. And they're blogging and things like that. And you want to connect with them also because the media creates public opinion. And public opinion is usually pretty important if you've got issues that are media worthy in the first place, right? If the issues are media worthy, then the media needs to be, well, needs to be respected and understood, right? I like to make it easy for the media. Our groups oftentimes issue a press release, what we're doing, what's going to happen, why, right? And the media people can just use it. It's free to use. They can just release the entire press release, taking out the words press release, as their own work. Now, isn't that simple? I'm busy, right? I've got, there's a lot of news in the world, and I have to decide, and I have to write it, and I have to research it. And I've got stuff. I've got a life, and I'm not being paid full time. I might not even be paid at all. Wouldn't it be easier if somebody just gave me the article to release to the public? Wouldn't that make my life easier? I don't disagree with it. There's nothing wrong with it. But then it would make our message, the writer, really, our message more clear, more favorable. It's a win-win all the way around. Why not? Right? Yeah. So you have to understand that it would be good if you told them what to say. Just a suggestion, a press release, right? And then it gets picked up by other media, whole. And you must also very carefully craft these so that if pieces of it get separated from the rest of it, it doesn't send a funny message, right? Because there's space constraints. Mm-hmm. And there's opinion constraints and like that. And so the trick is to craft something that can be sent out whole or sent out in pieces and it's still favorable to us. Mm-hmm. Speaking of favorable to us, let's work on self-doubt for a second. As a leader, you should never show that you have self-doubt. Maybe that's my bias. I see young leaders, okay, not necessarily physically young, but let's call them inexperienced leaders. And they tell you that they don't know what they're doing. I don't know what to do with this. What do you guys think? No, that's not a good sentence. You're the leader. Your group, your participants, your employer, the media, everybody wants to know that they are in the right group, going in the right direction with the right person. They don't want to know that you have self-doubts. That's you keep to yourself, right? Yeah. Yes. This is a real good point. Margaret and others are saying that you can, well, you have self-doubt that usually comes from the opinions of others. And you can consider the opinions of others, but don't dwell on them. Yes. Now, consider what other people say. Consider the source. Consider the reason for the source to tell you this, right? Consider all these things and consider whether or not it's a valid criticism. Sometimes it is. You shouldn't just dismiss something out of hand, but you shouldn't dwell on it either. And maybe you can kind of modify, right? That'll be all right. But that does. But modification doesn't come under the concept of self-doubt. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, this is also something to do. And a lot of people do this of me now that I am established in the field. Yes. George and others are saying that you need to ask advice of someone you trust, like a mentor. That's why mentorship is really good. I am not necessarily in favor of mentoring where you get assigned someone. That's a little hit or miss. But if there's some sort of oversight for the mentor also, some sort of assistance, it could be quite valuable. It's hard on your own to find a mentor until you're well established enough so that you have something to contribute also. But if you're really inexperienced or something and you need a mentor, you don't have much to contribute. And therefore, the mentor must get some sort of benefit outside of you, right? Some sort of accolade, some sort of gratitude, some sort of publicity. It might be a good thing for their job, right? Yeah, I deal with a lot of groups a lot of employers who have mentoring systems in place. And of course, before you can ask really personal advice, because you want to make sure that it's not being reported to the outsiders, you can kind of make connection with your mentor and see if it's a good fit. If not, then you can oftentimes get a different one, right? Okay. I actually, as part of my medical insurance, I'm entitled to a nutritionalist. Used to be called a dietitian, but now they're nutritionalists. And I was making quite a few dietary mistakes that I didn't realize were mistakes. And I want to be informed about science and informed about what I need to do. But I don't really like, and the dietitian's a mentor, right? The nutritionalist, excuse me, is a mentor, an expert that I seek for advice. I'm the kind of person who doesn't want to talk every day for 2 hours. Because people do. They take them shopping. Oh, I've got grapes in my hand. Should I buy them? That kind of a thing. It's on the phone. They don't actually see you. It's a telephone thing. That's nice, but I don't want to do it. And I don't want to discuss my feelings. Not does it make me nauseous, but how do I feel about lifestyle and lifestyle change and like that? No. So I'm on my fourth mentor, my fourth nutritionalist, and I like her much better because they all make notes and there's an oversight. I'm going to call them a committee. There's an oversight group. You can actually call in and say, my mentor is a very nice person. I mean, I don't want them to be impacted on their job, right? But we're not a good fit. I need someone who's more down-to-earth factual. Somebody who just tell me their opinion about something and tell me why, and then I'll make a decision, right? Yeah. And I want this to be done pretty, well, in not a lot of time. Let's talk for half an hour, maybe every few weeks is enough for me. I don't need the touchy-feely. You know what I mean. And so I needed to ferret out a mentor for advice, because I could use one, who really could just be could be factual and give an opinion and tell me why, and then not go all touchy-feely on me, right? Not physically, because they're on the phone, but you know what I mean, yeah. So a mentor has to meet your style, too, is what I'm telling you. A mentor has to be somebody that you can deal with and you can trust, and you think their advice is good, right? Right. Speaking of advice givers, how about let's talk about experts for a minute. Expert opinion is a really good idea, because sometimes you need to call in another impartial third party, right, in order to keep control, because you cannot break the stalemate. You have reached an impasse with these participants in negotiations as leader, and you have to know this. It's kind of something that you can see that you need to have a little assistance with maintaining control, which we're going to talk about in a second, right? And the expert is somebody that people can respect and will really give advice as to what we're going to do next and push the process forward. Oh, okay. Yes, your mentor might be an expert, and that might be personal to you, personal to your leadership, personal of an opinion of what you should do with leader and not brought in before everybody, right? Sometimes they can even come and witness what is happening so that they can give, so they can help, so they can give a better idea, right? I'm thinking more of experts when we've reached a point in negotiation where we need to have somebody tell us what the consequences will be, for example. I really don't like the phrase unintended consequences, because it's usually a bad phrase. It means that something has happened due to our actions that we didn't foresee, right? I like to call in experts and ask them what they think about what we're about to do. It's a valuable exercise. What's your opinion about this? What will the impact be, right? Because sometimes you've got an impact that you never occurred to you with people, things, animals, whatever, who you didn't even consider or bring into the room, right? Mm-hmm. But experts can also help keep the negotiation process on track. Mm-hmm. I like someone with experience as an expert, either good or bad, could have succeeded, could have failed, but they have an opinion, right? What happened? Media and employers oftentimes are impressed by credentials, so you can have both kinds. Yes, I do indeed often call in competing experts, especially towards the end when we're trying to make an action plan. Let's see what everybody has to say. Let's call in different types of experts, different types of people, and find out what they think the consequences will be. Right? Yeah. That's always interesting, and it's really important. The next thing we're going to talk about is control over the process. A lot of times experts help with that because they keep the process going forward. Right? Yeah. You also need the power to enforce. Right? We talked about that before, power to influence employment, perhaps, expel from group. A lot of times we need have to reach a deadline, and we need to enforce that somebody is being non-compliant. They're not exactly being uncivil. In fact, they may be kind of quiet, right? But whatever their role is, they're dragging their feet, right? It may be an Americanism, but it means that they're not really pulling their weight. They're not acting enthusiastically. They're not getting it done. They're, yeah, I'm getting it done, but it's not getting done. So you need to really track that and control it. In fact, you need to You need to track progress altogether. Excuse me, I'm going to take a slight break. I'm going to blow my nose. Isn't that awful? Hang on a second. It shows it's a live show. Pardon me, thank you. Yes, now my voice is clearer, eh? Yes. So in order to maintain control, you need to have a way of tracking progress, keeping track of everything, right? Keeping track of whether people are doing what they're supposed to do and whether or not your instructions were clear and everybody understands what they're supposed to do. So you need to be also open to questions. This has occurred. This research has gone this way. What should I do? It's not an unreasonable question. You need to be really, really reactive to questions. They need to be able to ask questions so they don't go off track. And you need to be able to track the progress. I think you should have a person other than you track progress because you're awfully busy. You're busy leading. You're busy being the important part of the progress, right? But you also need to have someone else help with that, especially when you get busier. And you've got lots of balls in the air, lots of negotiations going on at the same time. Yes, people are asking about interns. I like interns. In fact, I love interns. We have quite a few. But okay, interns in our world are doctoral students. They're more than college students. They're master's degrees, MBA students, at least, because they tend to be older and more experienced in the ways of employment. We don't pay them money. We pay them in credit, right, college credit, and it gives them good experience. We ask that our interns be able to commit for at least a year. because there's some training involved, right? And if you train them for a couple of months and then they're only there for a quarter, well, they haven't given you any benefit, right? They don't know anything. And somebody has to keep track of them. And hopefully you have the finances to afford a very good office manager, right? Somebody to keep track, somebody who's an assistant. You should pay these people extremely well. They are more than invaluable than I can possibly say. And they're going to be with you a long time because you're nice to them. You pay them extremely well, right? Right. And so they overlay the tracking and the keeping track of process and like that with experience and with knowledge of what's going on. Hey, we need somebody like that. In the very beginning, it might be you. But I think delegation is a good idea in this respect, I guess because I lose track of progress, and that's a bad idea. How do you maintain control? Uh-oh, we've got 5 minutes. We're going to miss the recipes again. I apologize. We'll try to get to them next time. I think last time we actually did one recipe. It was a miracle. How do you maintain control? How about clear and reasonable expectations, explanations, and instructions, right? Which probably need to be repeated more than once in different ways so that people understand what on earth they're supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. And I am indeed, because we have like 2 minutes, going to tell you that you need to create a team dynamic, right? We're a team. A lot of times people, it's not your responsibility to get the people in your group to like each other. A lot of times they come in with preconceived notions. In fact, you must watch your own preconceived notions. And they really, really, really don't like each other for one reason or another. It might be personal. They've dealt with each other before. It might be a cultural type bias. I don't like this kind of person because, I don't know, my religious leader, my mother, somebody told me that I don't like this kind of person. It's not your job to fix that. It's your job to let them understand that in this particular instance, for these particular issues, as a member of this particular group, we're going to get along sufficiently to make a successful outcome. And one of the things that I tell people, which seems to be a surprise, I don't know why this is a surprise to folk, that the faster we get this done, the more efficiently we act, the faster we reach our successful outcome and work it through, because it has to be workable. That's what makes it successful, right? The faster we get away from each other, and we don't have to deal with each other until the next time. And then you know something, the next time that there's issues, people remember, oh, I still think that, well, I have some sort of a horrible bias. But this person who I dealt with last time in this particular type of situation is an exception to my horrible bias, and I can deal with him and her, right? Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. It's workable, and workable is the key. And I'm going to leave you with this thought, that with the exception of civility, you need to be somewhat flexible because you can't control everything in advance. You can't know what's going to happen. You need to be flexible as the situations occur, as the situation changes, as the definition of success changes, right? You need to have flexibility and you need to be able to modify your leadership, your control, so that you can maintain order and get to the successful outcome. Yes. My friends, we are out of time. I apologize, we did not make it to the recipes, but we had a lovely conversation. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for your participation. Thank you for listening. If you want to find us, we're recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they are archived on that website. Thank you for listening. Thank you for coming. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.